Okay, so just take yourself present, and now let's have a look at our course book, The Demons in Vrindavan Leela, a very dramatic subject matter, very interesting subject matter. Turn over to the contents page, it's the second page. You'll see we have an introductory chapter, which I'll explain a little bit about in a minute. Then the second chapter is discussing the subject in general of anathas. That we'll discuss mainly tomorrow. Then the third chapter is summarizing all the demons. There's actually 21 demons. Some of them aren't exactly demons, like we'll be discussing the Brahma Vimohana Leela. We wouldn't really say Lord Brahma is a demon as such, but and also Govardhan Leela and the pastime of correcting the Brahmins who are performing sacrifice. Anyway, I hope we don't offend any of these persons by putting them under this broad category of demons, but it just seemed like the simplest way to organize the material to call the course the demons. And actually it is a fact that even Lord Brahma and Lord Indra in their different leelas in this regard with Krishna, they are actually representing very mundane and even in one sense you could say demoniac principles. So the third chapter then is just a very brief summary listing out all of them and very briefly the anatha that each one represents. And then we go into chapter by chapter looking at each one in some detail. Let's just have a look at page 9. The first demon is Putana. So the way we've organized it, you'll see up at the top of the page, there's a little analysis of Putana, the anatha which she represents, and then a little bit about her own background, who she was in her previous life, how she ended up being Putana. Then we've taken straight out of Krishna book the actual pastime itself. Now if you turn over to page 11, you'll see at the bottom of the page Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on Putana. Now in the case, unfortunately, only of three of these demons, but in the case of three of them, we have these essays written. It's actually a little unclear exactly who they're written by. They may have been written by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. If not, they were edited by him and approved by him directly and placed by him in Harmonist. So, analyzing all about Putana and the anatha which she represents. And in three cases, there are these essays. Otherwise, each demon is described first of all with a little analysis about the anatha, then a little bit of the history generally of that demon, at least in terms of their previous life, and then from the Krishna book we've reproduced what is printed in Krishna book. So as we said, there are 21 demons. We only have 18 days of discussion, and today we're just introducing, and then tomorrow we're going to discuss about anatha generally. So in some cases we'll have to combine two demons on one day. But we should be able to go into the subject matter, I think, in sufficient depth. It's a very interesting, the whole concept is very interesting. First of all, we discuss the leela. And it's very nice, of course, to discuss Krishna's pastimes, particularly his Vrindavan pastimes. We have information about many of the leelas from some other of the Vedic scriptures to just add a few little interesting highlights to the pastime itself. Then we also have some extracts from the commentaries of the previous acharyas about many of these demons. So you'll be coming across some, like you could say, slightly esoteric information, very nice information about the pastimes, which I'm sure you'll find very stimulating. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he's explained how these demons represent different anathas. Actually, they represent all the anathas, basically, which a devotee faces while trying to execute Krishna consciousness. So if we're able to go into these subject matters nicely, then it's like a little bit of an encyclopedia of conditioned consciousness while attempting to practice Krishna consciousness, and hopefully it'll help us to become free of our anathas and free of our conditioning. And in this way, along with relishing some of Krishna's leelas, we can also get some practical information about how we can advance. Just to begin, the discussion of the demons and the anathas they represent, I'll read one or two quotes from Srila Prabhupada, in which he discusses the importance of studying the demons. Some people, particularly in Hindu society, some people think that to hear about Krishna's leela is very nice, particularly the rasa leela and other leelas of that sort, more intimate leelas. But then when it comes to Putana, Bakasura, Agasura and company, then they'll skip over those things because they're not so stimulating from their point of view. But Prabhupada, he didn't see things in that light at all. So I'll just read one quote here from Prabhupada. So here it is said that Yad Uttama Shloka Guno Palambika. Just like there are some Sahajiyas, they think that Krishna's Rasa Leela is very nice, but Krishna's fighting with the demons and killing of the demons, that's not very nice. But they do not know the absolute truth, that Krishna is as good in any circumstances. Either he's enjoying the company of the gopis or he's killing the demon. That is the absolute truth. So these things should be understood. So any kind of leela, yad uttama shloka gunanu, leela, any kind of Krishna's activities. If you remember and chant Hare Krishna mantra, then you are liberated. Immediately you are liberated. You can talk of Krishna about his pastimes when he's killing Putana, Agasura, Bakasura. All are the same. Some of the rascals, they decide that to talk about Krishna embracing the gopis is very good, and to talk of Krishna killing Putana or other demons, that's not good. That is rascaldom. Anything about Krishna, you talk. Now, if we look in the introduction in our book, page 3, we have some quotes from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur from this book, Chaitanya Shikshamrita, in which he's discussing the nature of these pastimes, actually the nature of Krishna's pastimes generally, and distinguishing between different categories of Krishna's pastimes. If you look up at the top of page 3, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sri Krishna's activities are of two distinct types, namely nitya, eternal, and naimittic, occasional. In Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's Nitya Leela or eternal pastimes are conducted throughout 8 periods of the day, and they're constantly in motion. But in Bhoma Vrindavan, that's where we are right now, in Bhoma Vrindavan, this Ashtakaliya Leela is mixed with the naimittic Leela, in other words, occasional Leela. Some occasional pastimes include Krishna's leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura and Dwarka, his returning to Vraja, his killing of various demons, and so forth. These pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee who's bound within the material world. The naimittic lila, or occasional pastimes of leaving Vraja, actually exist in Goloka Vrindavan, but only in a conspicuously absent manner. They are truly manifest only in the material world. Practicing devotees or sadhakas understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. And such sincere devotees hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. Then we go on to say that in the above-mentioned book, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained how the demons Lord Krishna killed in Vrindavan represent the main obstacles facing the aspiring devotee. If, by the Lord's grace, these demons can be killed in the various ways they may manifest themselves in our lives, then our progress in devotional service is guaranteed. That is the theme of this course. So the rest of this introduction you can read this evening, if that's okay, please. And also read the next little chapter, pages 5 and 6, The Anatomy of the Cloud of Anartha. This is from Madhurya Kadambini. We'll be discussing about that tomorrow. And anyway, just read that at least. If you want to read more, you're welcome, but at least please read those things. Now, of course, we know that Krishna in Vrindavan, it's not that he only killed 21 demons. Of course, in some cases he didn't kill them, like Kaliya, he didn't kill Lord Indra, Lord Brahma, the Brahmins who are performing sacrifice, he didn't kill. Anyway, there are 21 of these incidents described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, Krishna killed a lot more demons, but these are just the main ones. The understanding is that every day, Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, they would go out herding the cows, first of all the calves, then the cows. And every day, without exception, at around about one or thereabouts, some demon would appear on the scene and attack Krishna or Balaram, or attack everyone. And Krishna, sometimes Balaram, but more often than not, Krishna would kill the demon. And all the boys would applaud and cheer. It would really be a very, quite a spectacular scene. And then everyone, as soon as Krishna killed the demon, every day, then everyone would know, this is a signal, time for lunch. So they would take their lunch break. Then, after lunch, they'd carry on playing. Actually, they weren't really. We hear the description that they were herding the calves or herding the cows, but they weren't really herding them so much. They were just playing. I was reading a description the other night by Jiva Goswami. Krishna's telling his mother's telling him, come on, you've got to go out and herd the cows. He says that, actually, mother, we never herd the cows. We just play. We just move around playing. But somehow or other, the cows just follow us. Because the cows couldn't be separated from Krishna and Balaram. So they would just follow them wherever they went. And Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys would just play. So then they'd carry on playing. Then sometime in the late afternoon, maybe 5 o'clock or something like that, another demon would appear on the scene every day. And generally, Krishna would kill the demon. And then everyone would realize, oh, time to go home. Signal, time to go home. So the understanding is that these demons, they came in this fashion by the arrangement of Mother Purnamasi. who of course is orchestrating Krishna's pastimes in so many ways, that if a demon had not come at lunchtime, Krishna and Balaram the cowherd boys would never have stopped for lunch. They would have just carried on playing. They would have missed lunch. And if the demon didn't come at the end of the day, they would never have gone home. They would have just carried on playing because they'd become so absorbed. So this is the idea. This is part of the idea at least. Now of course there's so many demons every day, and of course even before the time Krishna and Balaram were herding the calves, the demons were also coming. Putana is the very first. So there's so many of them, but 21, there are 21 main ones, and they're the ones who are described in Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're the ones we're going to be studying. Now, has everyone marked themselves present? So the idea is that all these demons represent different anathas. And the anathas they all represent are basically all the anathas there are. So if we understand them all very nicely and come to grips with them very nicely, then we can actually become free from anatha. When you read through this first little bit, this introduction, you'll see towards the end on page 4, we quote Srila Prabhupada from one of his purports. He's explaining that until a person becomes free from anathas, then they're going to experience, at least from time to time, and it may even be all the time, a lot of turbulence and disturbance actually, as they're trying to execute Krishna consciousness. This is due to the presence of anathas, and there are different types of anathas. Please read about it. That's what's in the next little chapter, pages 5 and 6. 4 types of anathas. And until you become free of anathas, then you can't avoid being disturbed. And who wants to be disturbed while practicing Krishna consciousness? Krishna consciousness is so nice. If we can just absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness, then we'll be blissful all the time. But unfortunately, I'm sure we're all aware, these things come. And we're trying to do our service and hear and chant and associate with the devotees, but some disturbance, some difficulty comes and things get thrown out of it. So, Prabhupada, I was actually just reading yesterday, I made a note, Prabhupada said that he was discussing the Radhakund Babaji's. Who sort of imagine that they're more advanced than they are. At least that tendency is there amongst them. They imagine that they have come to the level of realizing their eternal relationship to Krishna, relationship with Krishna. In fact, that is given to them when they get their equivalent of our first initiation. So, perhaps you can imagine, I assume most of you have got first initiation. Imagine if you were told what is supposedly your eternal relationship with Krishna, and then in that condition, you're meant to just absorb yourself in that. So this is what they try to do. Siddha Pranali it's called. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada didn't appreciate that at all. So let me just read another little quote from Srila Prabhupada. Without determined devotional service, how can we attain that position? That position means to realize your eternal relationship with Krishna. So what is the use of talking utopian? First business is anatha nivritti syat. Adoshadata ta sadhu sangata bhajanakriya tato anatha nivritti syat. You adopt this means that you've got full faith that Krishna consciousness will save me. Then you live with devotees who are similarly determined. Then you execute devotional service, Then, Anatha Nivritisyat, you'll be free from all these things. These are the stages. There is, up to Anatha Nivritti, you have to struggle very hard with determination, and then automatically everything will come. Tato Nishta, Tato Rachistata, Tata Satis, Tato Vava. So the idea is, once one becomes free from anathas, or as one becomes free gradually from anathas, then one's progress speeds up. And when one is actually free from anatha, or come to the level of nishta, then one can advance very quickly in devotional service. But up until that point, well, it can be difficult. It can be a struggle. So these demons, they represent these anathas. These demons only really appear in Krishna's leela in the material world, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. In the spiritual world, of course, they don't have demons, naturally. Sometimes, someone thinks they see a demon, so they come running into Vrindavan village, calling out, "Krishna! Krishna! Help! Help! Agasura's come back!" Somehow they think like that. False alarm. But everyone, when they hear this, they don't think, "Oh, how could it be?" They think, "Oh yes, Agasura is coming back." So there's a panic, big panic, and everyone runs to Krishna. This is in the spiritual world. So of course there's no Agasura, there are no demons in the spiritual world, but this is all going on by the arrangement of Krishna, or we could say even by the arrangement of Purnamasi, to enhance the devotees' relationship with Krishna, intensify their relationship with Krishna, like that. Even sometimes it's described, someone, I've never heard who, but I'm sure Purnamasi has something to do with it. Someone puts up like a big billboard with a picture of one of these demons in Goloka Vrindavan. And some devotee is just walking down some path in the forest, and they turn a corner, and there's this huge picture of Bakasura, or whoever it may be. So then naturally they panic, and the same thing happens. So there are no demons, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. These things in Goloka, they're conspicuous actually by their absence. They're only really present here in Krishna's leela of the material world. So they're part of this naimittic leela, occasional leela of the Lord, which is here to instruct us. It's really these pastimes performed for the benefit of people like us. That if we hear the pastimes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that actually the pastimes themselves have like an inbuilt potency to help to remove the particular anatha, which the particular demon being described represents. Plus then there are the lessons to be learnt, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained about the anathas, what they are, how to avoid them, and like that. So these occasional leelas are very important in this way. In Bhauma Vrindavan, Krishna appears to take, well, he actually takes birth, you could say. He's within his mother's womb, and then he comes out, not perhaps by the usual method, but at least there's some process like birth. But in Goloka, there's no birth. Krishna never takes birth. He never even appears to take birth. It's just that Mother Yashoda is thinking that he's my son. And everyone else accepts that, oh yes, he's her son. But there was never any time when Krishna actually came out of her womb, or was in her womb and then came out. So there are no demons also. It's just that people sometimes think there are demons. Even we understand that the gopis in Goloka Vrindavan, they don't have husbands. They just think they have. What are you doing to join Krishna now? What if your husband hears? Or somehow, just as there's a rumor that a demon's coming, even though there is no demon, but somehow the rumor comes. So sometimes rumors come that, oh, your husband is coming. So there is no husband. But still the gopi thinks, oh yes, my husband is coming. But there's no husband to come. It's just all part of this, the process of Krishna's Leela. Anyway, so we're going to discuss like this. Discuss about the pastimes. The first half or so, each of our periods will be an hour. So maybe for the first 20 or 25 minutes we'll discuss the Leela. And then we'll discuss about the Anatha. And then we'll try and leave about 5 or 10 minutes or so for questions and discussion. Anyone have any questions or comments at this point?
The supposed husbands, that also apply to Srimati Radharani?
Yeah. It's only in Bola Vrindavan that Abhimanyu is present. Yeah. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta discusses that in Brahma Samhita. It's discussed there. Yeah. Yes. Yes, these nimitic leelas, these occasional leelas, are there to help us. And so they do have a potency to help us in subtle ways also. Yeah. And in some cases it's not so obviously clear how the demon really represents the Anatha. In some cases it is clear, like Putana, she represents the pseudo-guru. So it's quite easy, if you consider the pastime, then it's not so hard to understand how she represents the pseudo-guru, in that she disguised herself to look like a goddess of fortune. And she looked so beautiful and so nice that Mother Yashoda even let her go into Nanda Maharaj's own room. And the men and the women in those days lived separately. So to let some other woman go into your husband's room alone, you know, very extraordinary. But somehow Mother Yashoda felt so satisfied with Putana that she just let her do whatever she wanted. So, Putana represents the pseudo-guru, you know, and there are other cases also where you can see quite easily how the demon represents a particular anatha. In other cases, it's a little more vague. But anyway, it's there, yeah. Actually, just regarding what you were saying about the husbands and the demons and all in Goloka, Abhimanyu is actually an expansion of Krishna. It's not really discussed so much, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur expands. Abhimanyu is an expansion of Krishna. Otherwise, well, no other person could associate with Srimati Radharani. He's an expansion of Krishna's shadow. That's who Abhimanyu is. But the relationship here in Boma Vrindavan between Abhimanyu and Radharani is so extraordinary that they don't really have a relationship. It's described that their relationship is so sort of distant that Abhimanyu never even touches Radharani's shadow, let alone Radharani. He never even touches her shadow. Yeah. So it's just like a mystical, transcendental type of relationship for the sake of enhancing Radha and Krishna's pastimes.
Seems like in the material world, time is past, present, future, which is like a destroyer. But it's also like time for a moment for lunch.
Yes.
Time for, you know, particular being this time. So time is like kind of present there. What's the difference?
Oh yes. Time is there in the spiritual world. Morning comes and the day's activities begin in Goloka. Then the activities continue through the day and then evening comes. Then everyone goes to bed and sleeps. Of course, Krishna goes to bed. And as soon as everyone else has gone to bed, about 15 minutes later, he's up and out the window. And then he comes back just about 10 minutes before everyone wakes up and climbs into bed. And Mother Yashoda tries to wake him up about, say, 15 or 20 minutes later, but she can't. And she thinks, oh, poor little Krishna. He's so tired from having herded the cows yesterday that he can't wake up. Little does she know, he's been up all night. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, time is there in the spiritual world. Yeah. But the difference is that in the material world, time is destroying everything. Everything is becoming degraded. But in the spiritual world, there's no degradation. So, in effect, time is not having an effect. Time is more just like a stage for different features of Krishna's different pastimes. That's all. Yeah. But no one's becoming older or no thing is becoming older. Yeah. But still time is passing. Night is there, morning is there. All these things are there. Yeah. There has to be a spiritual counterpart of material time. Because everything in the material world is based on some similar thing in the spiritual world, but it's a perverted reflection here. So time in the material sense is a perverted reflection of that spiritual time. But because that spiritual time has that nature of not deteriorating anything, therefore sometimes it's said that there is no time. But it means that there is no time in the sense that we know it here. One last point.
I remember meeting in Vrindavan Mahamamrita by Prabhupada Sarasvati, how he was seeing all the different leelas of Krishna happening at the same time. In other words, it seems like it's beyond the rules of time that we know here.
Oh yes. Time is the servant of Krishna and servant of his enjoying in his pastimes. So, you know, in Krishna's pastimes, there's certainly an unlimited flexibility of time also. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I think we're going to have to finish here.
Krishna comes from Goloka and performs his pastimes in Goma, Vrindavan. At that time he leaves Goloka, Vrindavan?
No. No.
He's there.
He's there. He's there. And when he leaves here, he's still here. He's still here now.
So he never leaves and never goes anywhere.
In a sense, yes. But in another sense, he goes and that idea is there. He comes here. He apparently wasn't here. Now he's here. And then after some time, he goes and he's apparently not here. But he is still here and he's always still there. There is one case I read, where was it? I think it's Chaitanya Bhagavat, about Lord Chaitanya, his pastimes, that Narada Muni went to Vaikuntha once to visit Lord Narayan during Lord Chaitanya's pastimes 500 years ago. And he landed in Vaikuntha and he found it was completely deserted. No one was there. No Lord Narayan, nobody. Just one old man. And he asked him, what happened? And the man said, oh, they've all gone to Navadvip. So, you know, we have this idea that the two-armed form of Krishna with the flute is the original form. So that makes us think of, you know, like that one original form. But that one original form by Krishna's transcendental arrangement is manifest in Goloka and manifest here. And even now that Krishna's manifest pastimes are going on in some other universe in the material world, but still that original form is here. It's just not manifest to those who are not on a very exalted level of pure devotional service. But still we understand it is the one original form. Actually, the original form, to put it that way, is the form in which Krishna performs the rasa dance. Krishna's form as a baby, even though it's considered generally as original form, but in another sense it's an expansion of that. Krishna's form as a 16-year-old boy, as like the original form, so to speak. Anyway, we don't need to worry about it too much. There is an explanation that sometimes during the rasa dance, Krishna, sometimes he expands himself into as many forms as there are gopis. Other times there's just one Krishna and many gopis, and Krishna runs around from one to the other so quickly. He's just running around so fast that no one really notices that he's not with me. So he's kept very busy. But even when there are many forms, two-armed forms playing the flute, still we understand this is the one original form of Krishna. Any other question, comment?
You said form of demons represents form analysis.
Basically, yeah.
So these 21 demons, do they represent subset of the matters, or do they represent all the matters?
Sorry, I understand.
Do these 21 demons, because you said all demons represent the matters, so these 21 demons, do they represent a subset of the matters, or do they represent all the matters?
Each demon represents an anatha, one or two, or like a small collection perhaps of anathas. And between them, that they sort of include all the anathas that there are, basically.
Because we only study between one of them. Yes,
because the other demons? Yes. No. Now the other demons, it appears, don't really apply. I mean, the details about them we don't really know.
So would they also represent a certain creature?
Not that we're aware of, at least we're not informed that they do. I mean, we're not really informed about them one way or the other. But definitely these 21 represent basically the broad scope of the anathas that a devotee will face. Yeah. Okay. So please read the introduction tonight, plus the second chapter about the anatomy of the cloud of anatha.